All right. Well, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was an author, and he created a fictional character named Sherlock Holmes. I'm assuming most of you have heard, raise your hand if you've heard of Sherlock Holmes. Okay, good. Excellent. Sherlock Holmes was one of the greatest detectives ever. He was better than anybody we see today, CSI Miami, Monk, all of these people. He was the detective. He was so intelligent. One thing that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle wrote that really rings true even today is this. He said, "Once you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, no matter how improbable, must be the truth." Let me say it one more time. Once you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, no matter how improbable, must be the truth. Okay? This is really intelligent. All right? It means if you've got a couple of choices, if you can eliminate one by saying this one is impossible, whatever's left, no matter how improbable you think it may be, must be the truth. Okay? It's elementary, my dear Watson. So it's the process of elimination. All right? So we want to use that when we talk about evolution, because this can be applied to many things. Creation versus evolution is something that I use this on because it works very well. So, real quick, my purpose today is not to teach you everything you need to know about evolution, okay? I want to teach you how to quickly prove evolution false and then point the person back to God, okay? That's my goal. Because remember, we can debate evolution all day long. It's one of those intellectual debates that we can have. We can debate it all day long. But if I never take the person back to the Creator, I'm just battling against their intellect and it never goes anywhere, okay? Take a look at Romans chapter 2. You'll have to forgive me. I'm just getting over a sickness this week. Romans chapter 2, verse 14. It says, "For when Gentiles who do not have the law, by nature do the things in the law, these, although not having the law, are a law to themselves, who show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness, and between themselves their thoughts accusing or else excusing them, in the day when God will judge the secrets of man by Jesus Christ, according to my gospel." When we read this verse, what it's really telling us is that exactly what Bungie had talked about in this previous session with relativism. He said, "I know that Jesus is the Creator, and I know you know He is too." And what he's talking about is that God has written His law in our hearts so that we will not have an excuse. We have no excuse, Paul says in Romans, that we know God is our Creator, that we know His law is written on our hearts. And even if we don't have anybody to tell us differently, we know it inside of ourselves, intrinsically inside of ourselves. So we need to understand that. So again, I can argue with them at the level of their intellect all day long, but until I bring them back down to the level of their Creator, that which they cannot deny, that understanding in their heart that His law is written there and that they can't deny that, then I've done a disservice, really. Okay? But don't get me wrong. We still want to talk about evolution. There are people that really do have a stronghold. You know, when we talk about witnessing in the marketplace especially, there are people who have their little bag of tricks. And every time somebody tries to talk about God, they pull out their evolution card. They pull out their, you know, "Can God make a rock so big that He can't lift it?" You know, this kind of stuff that they pull out every time that they think is going to blow every Christian away and they won't have an answer. So we want to be able to talk about evolution and we want to be able to defeat it, okay? There are legitimate reasons that people have strongholds there because they've been duped. They've been lied to. Your children are being lied to in school right now, okay? And you can quote me on that, all right? So the point is that we want to be able to talk about it, but at the same time, we want to be able to direct them straight back to the Creator, straight back to God. All right. So we're going to look at two arguments today. Okay? I'm going to give you two arguments. I'm going to give them to you so that you can kind of learn it and kind of understand it, hopefully. And that then you'll want to actually learn it and be able to give it to others as well. So there's two points that are going to help us quickly move somebody off the topic of evolution and back to the Creator. The first one is the loss of information in DNA. Sounds really scary, don't worry. The loss of information in DNA. The second one is the language of DNA. All right? We're going to start with the first one, the loss of information in DNA. Here's how the argument goes. The evolutionary theory is based on an information gaining process. Let me explain what I mean. In other words, you start with a one-cell organism and you move to a human. Our DNA has the instructions on how to build us, okay? So if you go from a one-cell organism to a human, you've got to come up with the DNA information for now a head, a couple of arms, a couple of legs, hair. Well, for most of us, hair, you know. Some of us looking around, you know, maybe not so much. But a couple arms, legs, head, all this kind of stuff. So there had to be an information-gaining process that put that information in the DNA to go from the one-cell organism to me. Okay? So evolution is based on an information-gaining process. So in order for that to happen, we should be able to see processes in nature where a gain of information occurs in the DNA. Okay, we can talk about mutations, we can talk about new growths, whatever it is you want to call it, but we should be able to see information gaining processes all over the place if evolution is true. Okay, here's the problem. When scientists study mutations and changes at the genetic level, they don't find information gain. What they actually find is information loss. All the mutations and the changes at the genetic level that we study find that we get an information loss when there is a change, not an information gain. Okay? This is very condemning evidence for evolution. So let me give you an example. Most people talk about bacteria. Oh, well, you know, you take antibiotics and bacteria evolve and they become resistant to the strain of antibiotic, right? That's the biggest argument you're going to find on the planet, and that's why I automatically work it into this argument when I tell people, because you got to give them an example. This is the perfect one to give them. So bacteria supposedly evolve and they become resistant to the antibiotic, okay? Well, we have to understand what actually happens when we kill off bacteria. When you go to the doctor and he prescribes you an antibiotic, what actually happens is you take that antibiotic, okay? There's bacteria in your body. That bacteria actually has DNA instructions to make certain enzymes within itself. A little enzyme, just think of it as a liquid just to help you understand it. Just a little liquid. It creates a little liquid, an enzyme. And then the antibiotic comes in and says, knock, 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 I'd like to come in. And it says, okay. And so the antibiotic comes into the cell, okay? And all of a sudden, the antibiotic reacts with this enzyme that it's made. And it has a really bad, harsh reaction, and it creates a poison within that cell, and it kills off the cell. Blech. All right? That's how an antibiotic works, because it reacts with the naturally made enzymes within the bacteria. Okay? Now let's take a look at how a bacteria becomes resistant. When a bacteria mutates, what happens is it loses information. Okay? Now it lost the information to create that enzyme. Now it no longer has that little liquid in there, right? No longer has a little liquid, no longer has that little enzyme. The antibiotic comes over, knock, 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 I'd like to come in. Okay, it comes in, but there's no enzyme. It doesn't react with anything, and it just kind of floats around. Hey, what's up? Okay? The bacteria doesn't die because the enzyme's not in there to react with it. Now, did it become resistant to the antibiotic? Yes. Did it become resistant because of an information gain? No. It became resistant to the information gain because it lost the information to make the enzyme that reacted with it. So even with bacteria becoming resistant to antibiotics, it's because of an information loss, not because of an information gain. We need to remember that. So evolution is based on an information gaining process. Every single time that we study things at the genetic level, we find that it's all based on an information loss, not an information gain. That means, at the very core, don't worry about fossils. Don't worry about, you know, transitional forms. Don't worry about anything. At the very core, evolution is impossible. If you can't find information gain, evolution is impossible. Make sense? And what did we say? Once we've eliminated the impossible, whatever's left, no matter how improbable, must be the truth. Okay? That's the first argument. If we don't find information gaining process, evolution dies at the very core. That's the best way to argue evolution, by the way. Break every time you have an argument, find the very core of the argument to where if it's right, it's good. If it's wrong, it crumbles. That's the easiest way to argue anything. Okay? Don't go out on the outer edges and argue fluff. Go to the very core. And that's what we've done. If evolution is an information-gaining process, we do not see information gain in the DNA. We see information loss. Therefore, evolution is impossible. Okay? Now, I understand that some of you may go, wow, I have to memorize bacteria, antibiotic. I was a theater major. I don't do the study. I just memorize what other people studied. So, you know, if you can memorize that stuff, that's awesome. It's a very simple, easy argument. And I'm telling you this from experience. People will not argue with you because they didn't know this. This is something totally new to them. They've been lied to and lied to and lied to over and over again in school and in the newspapers, and they absolutely believe there's information gain. But when you really sit down and explain it to them, they go, huh, they don't have an answer. Now all you have to do is move it back to the Creator and start talking to them about Christ. Okay? I understand, though, that I wanted to give you a couple of options on evolution. So let's move to the second argument. This is going to be a short message, probably. I'll make up stuff on the way. But I'm just kidding. So, the second example, we're going to talk about the language of DNA. Okay? The language of DNA is this. You were probably told in school something to the effect of, well, don't worry, all the molecules just had to line up in the right order, and bam, life occurred. Everything just lined up, everything kind of fell into place, and life just happened. Because that's all that was needed, was life just happened. You know? Well, first of all, if I squash a bug, you know, all of his parts are there. But he's not alive. So that right there, should tell you that that's not really all that's needed, right? So here's another point. Let's take a look at an example, because teachers and people like this will give you examples. They do little experiments, all right? They'll do things like they'll pull letters out of a hat. And they'll spell a word and say, oh, look, we got B-A-T, bat. We got a word out of random chance. We just pulled letters out of the hat. You know, well, that part's true. They say, see, oh, given enough time, given enough chance, you know, we could have a whole book. We could have Shakespeare. We could write Shakespeare's poems or, you know, Macbeth. And given enough time with evolution, we could get life, and we could get the earth and humans and everything else. There's a big problem with this argument, and I want to show it to you. The word B-A-T, bat. I can play baseball with it. What does the word bat, who does the word bat mean something to? Does anybody know? Somebody who speaks English. Somebody who's gone through this message before, probably. somebody who speaks English. Right? If I told you the word Hieb, H-I-E-B, would that mean anything to you? Well, does anybody speak German here? I may have said the word wrong, and they're going, that doesn't even mean anything in German, Dave. But the word Hieb means bat in German. So the word bat only means something to me if I know the language system that was used to interpret it. So I don't just have to have the letters that line up in the right order. I have to know the language system in order to interpret the order of those symbols. B-A-T means nothing if I know German and not English. B-A-T means bat. I play baseball with it if I know the English language system. All right? Now let's apply that to the DNA. Okay? Within our DNA, there are two things inside of it. Okay? We have genes that make up the DNA strands. Genes are just the things that tell us what our traits are going to be. If you've ever heard somebody say, oh, you have your mother's nose, or you have your father's eyes, or something like that, that's a trait. Your genes tell you, and I'm not talking about Calvin Klein, I'm talking about the genes of your DNA. They tell you what your nose is going to look like, how much hair you're going to have, you know, that sort of thing. All right? So those genes make up the strands of DNA. Now, within those strands of DNA, there's two parts to it. Number one, you have the molecules, the genes that line up in the right order to tell you that, hey, Dave, you're going to have really, you know, dark, really kinky, curly hair if I would let it grow out. You know, you're going to have this nose and, you know, transparent white skin, that sort of thing, you know. That's what my genes actually say, I think. But those genes line up, those molecules line up. What? How do we know what they mean unless we know how to interpret them? You see, scientists have gone in and they've discovered that there is a language system embedded inside your DNA that actually interprets the molecules that are lined up. Okay? So within your DNA, not only is there the instructions, the little blueprint, as it were, you can call it a blueprint, but there's a language system embedded inside to be able to interpret that blueprint, to be able to go, okay, you are going to have white, pasty, transparent skin. All right. Cells, go out and make white, pasty, transparent skin. All right? That's what the DNA does. So you have to have two things. It can't just be that the molecules line up in order. You have to have two things. The molecules have to line up in order, and you have to have the language system in order to interpret it. Okay? Now, here's the kicker. Where did we get the English language? Would it be fair to say that an intelligent person, or we still have people today that kind of add to our English language, you know? Would it be fair to say that intelligent beings have given us the English language? Thank you for nodding your head. Everyone else, I was a little worried about. Okay. I would assume that we could then apply that to all languages, that for all languages, and someone in intelligence, someone who was intelligent or intelligent beings created those languages. Okay? Who gave us the language system that's embedded in our DNA? Based on what we know about our English language, you would have to be an intelligent being, right? Intelligence does not arise from nothing or from matter. And we'll get into that in a second. Therefore, there had to be an intelligent being who embedded the language system into our DNA. But get this, the DNA language system was embedded in there before the very first living thing was ever created. Which means there has to be an intelligent designer who embedded the DNA language into our DNA, who gave us life and who created us. Okay? The fact that there is a language system embedded in our DNA proves that there must be an intelligent designer who designed our DNA, who designed our bodies, and who designed this earth. Okay? I've used this argument so many times, I've just completely gone off my notes. So, let me give you a quote real quick. We've already established that the language systems come from intelligent beings. Therefore, there had to have been an intelligent designer that gave us the language system that made our DNA. Werner Gitt, who is a scientist, who wrote a book, In the Beginning Was Information. If you can find this book, it's a really good one. It says, there is no known law of nature, no known process, and no known sequence of events which can cause information to originate by itself in matter. In other words, there's no way that an intelligence or a language system can arise from just matter, from nothing. We've never seen any natural process that can do this. Not only that, there is no known natural law through which matter can give rise to information. Neither is there any physical process or material phenomenon known that can do this. That means that we haven't even figured out how to artificially do this. Not only do we not see a natural process doing it, we haven't even figured out how to do it artificially yet. So it's impossible for intelligence to just rise up out of nothing. There had to be an intelligent being to give us intelligence. Okay? Which means that evolution is starting in a lot of trouble, right? Yeah. It means they're in a lot of trouble. In fact, there's a video of Richard Dawkins. I don't know if you guys know who Richard Dawkins is, but he is one of the most outspoken, arrogant, you know, vehement people against Christianity there is. And he was asked on video to come up with one natural process where information gave rise from matter. And he can't do it. He can't do it. One of the leading minds in evolutionary theory, they can't come up with it. Because there is none. If there's a language system embedded in our DNA, which we've proven scientifically, there's a language system in our DNA, then it had to come from intelligence. And that intelligence had to be around before the first organism was created, which means there's an intelligent designer. No questions asked. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. So where do we go from there? Now that we've got two arguments that we can prove, and honestly, I've taken more time than you really have to take on these arguments, right? I mean, you can really go through these arguments quickly and actually move them back to the Creator much faster than what I've done. But where do we go from there? I want to make sure that we remember the point. The point is not that we just defeat evolution and have them go off and go, well, that guy's wrong and I'm going to go figure it out, you know. It's great if they go study it. I mean, they're going to find, if they truly study it, they're going to find that evolution is false. But what we really want to do is immediately point them back to the Creator. So once you've eliminated evolution, you point them back to the fact that they are now responsible to a Creator and they need to face that fact. You see, think about it this way. Why do most scientists believe in evolution in the first place? You would think that most scientists would say, because the facts are overwhelming and we believed in it because everybody could see the truth. But I can give you quote after quote after quote of people who say, because it fit my moral standards better than creation. Because we can't let a divine foot in the door because of our a priori adherence to materialism. All these different quotes over and over and over that have nothing to do with the facts, that have to do with the fact that they can't stand the fact that if there is a Creator, they are responsible to Him. They have a responsibility to a Creator who has created them, and they don't want that. Because remember, if man evolved, who gets to make the rules? Who was it? Was it Charlie Manson who said that he was taught in school that he just evolved at a random chance, so would it really matter what he did? Who could tell him what to do? I mean, evolutionary theory has true ramifications, okay? Don't kid yourself. Your kids are being lied to, and your family members are being lied to, and it has ramifications. But remember, if evolution is true and man evolved, I make the rules. Because if I evolved, what makes me better than Bungie? Who's Bungie to tell me what the rules are? He evolved just like me, so I'm going to make up my own rules. So if we evolve, man makes the rules. If we were created, God makes the rules, and man is responsible to God. That's why people are willingly ignorant of the truth, because they don't want to remember, they don't want to admit that there's a creator. So we have to take them back to that. Hey, you know what? We've just talked about evolution. If evolution is impossible, we're left with creation. And I got to tell you, if creation's true, you are created. That means you're responsible to a creator. And you can find out who that creator is and what he expects of you in the Bible. And you can take them through that. You can take them through the gospel. You can take them through, you know, what God is looking for in them. He's looking for a loving relationship. He's looking to save them from their sins, you know. And you can take them through that stuff. But remember, always point them back to the Creator. Now, I've purposely not used several different arguments for a very specific reason. You can use arguments such as, well, according to the scientific method, you know, you have to be able to observe evolution, and you have to be able to repeat evolution. And that is true. We cannot actually observe evolution happening, and we cannot repeat evolution. We have not been able to do that. Therefore, evolutionary theory is not true. The only problem with that argument is that it doesn't eliminate evolution. It means that we can't prove it. But you can't prove God either. And so you've just taken yourself down to the same plane level, but you haven't eliminated evolution. That's why I want you to understand I've chosen these two specific arguments, because they specifically eliminate evolution as impossible. Now, there's other objections that people may throw at you, and I want to give you just an idea of what you want to do with them. They may throw out transitional fossils. You know, what about, you know, transitional fossils? I mean, you know, they're proving that, you know, we evolved. Well, the truth of the matter is there's no watertight scientific evidence of evolution. There is no true evolutionary transitional fossils. There are none. And if you get down to the nitty-gritty, scientists will admit that. I can show you quote after quote after quote. That's not the point of the study, so I'm not going to. But all you have to do is say, you know what, there's no watertight scientific evidence for transitional fossils. Every single one that's been brought up actually has proponents against it, even in the evolutionary realm. Even evolutionists disagree among them as well. And so there really is no transitional fossil that we can prove. And that actually most evolutionists will admit that the evidence for transitional fossils is really rather condemning to the evolutionary theory. Just a quick statement like that, okay? It's really condemning to the evolutionary theory. But the point is this: if we eliminate evolution at its very core, we don't have to worry about the transitional fossils. And you just take them back to that, right? You know, just take their objection, transitional fossils, say, you know what, there's no watertight evidence. Actually, it's really a condemning evidence against evolutionary theory. But if you think about it, if we break down evolution at its very core right over here, there's no need to talk about that, because that's false based on the very evidence that evolutionary theory is based on information gaining processes, and all we see is information losing processes. And therefore, it's false in the very beginning. So again, just take the objection, kind of throw it off. I guarantee you, if they want to really argue it, you can get their email, you can find information on this stuff. It's easy to defeat, okay? It's not a problem. But just get their email and do it through email. They might throw out natural selection. They might say, well, look, we can prove evolution is true through natural selection, okay? There's a couple things that you want to remember about natural selection. First of all, the theory was created by a creationist before Darwin ever got hold of it, okay? So natural selection is not something created by an evolutionist. So there is no proof in natural selection for evolution. Number two, natural selection is very simply changes within a kind. Evolution is changes from one kind to another, okay? So natural selection is like a dog being changed into a different looking dog, okay? Whereas evolution would be a dog changing into a horse, Right? So if they throw out natural selection, just tell them, you know what, that's changes within a kind. That's actually completely within the realm of creation. It's not a problem at all. Actually, that was created by a creationist before Darwin ever got hold of it. But again, if you look at the very core of the matter, evolution is an information-gaining process, and we can prove that there's only information-losing processes in nature. Therefore, evolution is defeated before it ever gets started. Again, just take the argument, throw it out, basically, and just go back to the point. And then again, once you reiterate that, you just go back in. You know, we can sit and argue all day about evolution, but the truth of the matter is that on Judgment Day, you're going to be faced with a God who's giving you a standard to live up to. Are you going to be good enough? Are you going to be good enough to get into heaven? Now they're faced with that question. You know, if you want to, you can ask them, hey, we can help you find out if you're good enough to get into heaven. And they'll go, you know, most of them are pretty good natured. They'll go, okay, all right. You know, then you take them through the Ten Commandments. Well, have you ever lied? Yeah, all right. Well, what does that make you? A liar. Okay, all right. Have you ever stolen anything? Yeah. You know, okay, what does that make you? A thief, all right? So then you can just go back and tell them, you know, hey, by your own admission, you're a lying thief. And by your own admission, you're that. And that's only two of the commandments. You got eight other commandments pointing at you on Judgment Day. And you got to figure out what you're going to do about it, you know? So that's the key. Take the evolutionary argument, point them back to the Creator, ask them if they're going to be good enough to get into heaven on Judgment Day. Because that's the real key. It has nothing to do with evolution. It has nothing to do with anything else. But are they in need of a Savior? The answer is yes. Every single one of them is in need of a Savior. So again, the idea is to sweep the rug out from under the evolutionary argument, take them straight back to the Creator, and just love on these people, guys. Just love on them, because I tell you what, they've been lied to. And Bungie will tell you that he believed in evolution for a long time, and there's so many people that I know have believed in evolution, and they realize that they've been duped. And we've got to come alongside them and lovingly tell them that this is what the truth is and help them to understand it. I can't impress upon you enough that evangelism has nothing to do with being intellectual. If it had to do with being intellectual, I would not be in evangelism. Because I am, like I said, I was a theater major because I couldn't get into any other major. No, I'm just kidding. But the idea was that I was horrible at math, you know. English, well, you've heard me speak, holy cow, you know. It has nothing to do with being intellectual. You know what drives me to evangelize? It's simply a love for God's people. I mean, to look out there at South Congress, the next time you're in a restaurant, look around. Three-quarters of those people are probably going to hell. Real honestly. If we read the Bible and understand it, three-quarters of those people are probably going to hell. The fathers, the mothers, the children. Man, does that break your heart? The question is, does it break your heart enough to actually go out and do something about it? That's the only thing that drives me. Not because I think I'm smart enough, or because I think I have all the answers. I know I don't. And I'm given questions all the time I don't know the answer to. But the thing that drives me is that little girl sitting by her daddy needs to know the truth. And that daddy needs to tell his little girl the truth. And the only way he's going to know the truth is if I tell him. So let that drive you, guys. And let that drive you as you listen to Bungie's next message and gives you the methodology as he kind of pulls it all together for you guys and really shows you how to take all these things and really be used by God as a tool and to really just work for his kingdom, because that's what we're here for, you know? That's what we're here for. If we just wanted to praise God, our praise will be perfect in heaven, you know? The one thing we can't do in heaven is witness. That's why we're here, to help others come to Christ. Let's pray.